out there, everyone in podcast land, and welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies. And I'm Jeremy Gegner, the editor-in-chief here, and I just wanted to welcome you to this episode and record a very short little intro here for you. So one of the best things about running the network and about being a part of the Front Row Network is that we get some opportunities that a lot of people don't get because we're a press thing and because we are a media entity. We get to go to Comic-Cons and conventions and film festivals and such and interview a lot of great people. And you've heard some of those in the past that we have done. And once again, we got to go and cover Comic-Con St. Louis, the Wizard World Comic-Con, as part of the press. And it was really, really amazing. I went and Steve Sykes went, one of our writers from the website. And we got to go down there and interview a bunch of people, a bunch of celebrities that were there doing their tables. But also what we really loved even more than that was getting to talk to the people that were there as the exhibitors, the true geeks, the true nerds of the Comic-Con that were really there. And they had so many interesting things. We got to interview a guy who does geek pumpkin carving. That was really awesome. We got to interview some of the great artists that were there, both comic book and standalone art. And then, of course, we had all those celebrity interviews like Brian Krause from Charmed, Chris Owen and Thomas Ian Nicholas from American Pie. David Alpley from the Tudors, just a bunch of other things. Even Lou Ferrigno, the original Incredible Hulk. We got to talk to all these people. So this episode is going to be a massive one cut of all of the interviews that we did for the weekend at Comic-Con St. Louis. And then, of course, if you want to see these interviews, you can go over to our YouTube page, search for the Front Row Network on YouTube, and you can find all of these videos of these interviews that we did. And, you know, you can get to see a little bit more of the artwork that these artists are talking about in some of these clips. So also look forward to – we also got to cover the Heroes and Villains and Walker Stalker Con up in Chicago with a new correspondent, Trey Johnson. We're going to be having that episode going for you here pretty soon as well. But here you go. That's it for this intro. Please enjoy these interviews here from Comic-Con St. Louis. If you want to jump to a specific interview, you can look down in the show notes of this podcast and tell you where what time stamp to jump to. But enough talking for me. Let's get into it. Here are interviews from Comic-Con St. Louis 2019. Out there in internet podcast, whatever land you're hearing this on. This is Jeremy from the Front Row Network and Steve, one of our newest contributors. Say hi to Steve.
Hello.
Yeah, so we are here at Wizard World Comic Con in St. Louis. We are here at the very first day here on Friday.
Day one.
Day one. We are about to kick everything off, and it's going to be a great day. We're going to do a lot of interviews today. We're going to try and get as many celebrity interviews as possible. I'm really personally looking forward to trying to get a word with Brian Krause from Charmed, a really, really great show that I know is doing a reboot soon. So, I mean, like, I'm pretty excited about that. What about you, Steve? What are you excited for?
I'm excited for that as well. Lots of good vendors looking like. The convention floor is just resplendent.
Yes.
With vendors. And, the Charmed reunion should be a good thing. Jason Momoa isn't here until Sunday, but that'll really spike the interest there.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, it's the king of the ocean, so, I mean, you got to go.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you can't not go see Jason Momoa. He might break something in half doing that Samoan dance that they do, you know? So, again, we're going to try and do as many interviews as possible today. We'll get those up immediately, and of course we'll do our recaps. Steve and our new friend Luke is going to be
Kyle.
God, why do I keep calling him Luke? Kyle, I'm sorry, Kyle. Kyle is going to be here with Steve for Saturday and Sunday covering all the panels, just like we did last year. And there's some great ones. You know, Sean Astin's going to be back here. Are there any other panels you're looking forward to?
Sean Astin is going to be here. There's a guy whose name escapes me at the moment. He is one of the original Filmation animators.
Yeah.
So if you were a fan of Thundar the Barbarian, or he has lots of stories from the beginning of Filmation, so that'll be kind of cool from a animation standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, as always, Wizard World has so much stuff to do. Even if you're not press like us, man, there's just fans. There's so much stuff to do here. You get to meet so many of your favorite celebrities, listen to the stories of how they made the stuff that you love them in. And so I would encourage everyone, if you're not here today, get here on Saturday or Sunday and have some fun with us.
And I just remembered, if you're a Saturday Night Live fan,
yeah,
Chris Kattan is here. So that should be a really fun panel.
Yeah, we'll have to try and get him to do some Roxbury
head bobs. All right, so that's going to be it for this first report. Look out for more of them. Of course, go to frnpod.com. Search for the Front Row Network on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, or at Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter. All right, so everyone, we're here with Brian. Is it Krause or Krause?
Krause.
Okay, we're here with Brian Krause, of course, of Charm fame and a bunch of other stuff. Brian, thanks so much for talking with the Front Row Network today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously Charmed was such a mega hit at the time, but, you know, it always kind of stuck out to me was it was kind of ahead of the curve when it came to, like, a show about female empowerment and stuff, you know? Did you guys kind of feel that at the time when you were making it? Was that something that you were aware of, and now that it's going more and more in today's day?
I don't know that we were so aware of it. You know, we didn't have the names or the titles back in the 90s and early 2000. Everything wasn't so put in the box. You know, Shannon Doherty, Alyssa Milano, Holly Marie Combs, and Rose, they, you know, they're strong women. They do their thing. And I think back then they proved that if you have a goal and you put your mind to it, nobody can stop you, and especially for women. And it was ahead of its time. You know, they knew we were the longest-running female-led show ever. And that was something they were proud of. And, you know, it wasn't without them having talent and the ability. You know, it wasn't handed to them. They had to go fight and get it. And, you know, kudos to them. And they kind of paved the way, I think, for what we're seeing going on today.
Absolutely. Steve, what about you?
I was noticing among your credits, you actually had an appearance in L.A. Noir as one of the characters there. What was that experience like? Because that was like at the very vanguard of motion capture and video games. And
well, I want to do it again. It's so much fun. You're in a big room and there's 50, 100 cameras around you, and they lay out a grid on the floor where you go based on this computer model. And so you do it all, you know, and you got the little balls on you and stuff. And then when they did, they put your head on, so you perform it. And then a couple months later, we come back and you sit in this chair and you kind of got like a little green below. And there was all these cameras around us that did all these, you know, and I literally gave all my dialogue, you know, I had to do it all again. And then they took my head and put that on the body, and it was different. I mean, I'd like to try it again, just to, you know, it's fun.
Charmed video game or something.
Where's that coming up? Well, kind of in that vein. So, of course, there is a new reboot of Charmed that's in the works right now. I don't know, like, if you or any of the other cast, like, still, like, talk. I'm sure you do. But is there something that you're hoping they really kind of pull from your guys' series as they're embarking on the new one?
You know, I haven't watched it. You know, they haven't approached me to be a part of it. So, I don't know what I can say about what they're doing. You know, I know the fans want a lot of us, the originals, to be a part of a new show. So, you know, it would make sense they pulled us in and collided the worlds and added, you know, the charm lore went on. But, you know, I mean, I think it would help. It'd be, you see them do it with The Flash and some of these other shows, and the fans love it. You're like, it legitimizes it. It crosses the worlds, and, you know, you're just gaining more audience.
Well, it's the official Front Row position that we want that to happen, so we'll direct all of our fans to do that. Where can they find you online if people want to follow you?
Yeah, I'm really scarce. I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, you know, and I post once in a while. I'm bad at it. I don't interact well, but I think on Twitter I'm the Brian Krause or the Brian Krause, and Instagram Brian Krause 21, just my name on Facebook. But I've got this whole social media aversion lately that I just.
It's not a bad stance to have.
I don't want to offend somebody. I don't need all the news. Somebody post something with a puppy. Jesus.
Fantastic. Brian, thank you so much for taking some time.
Thanks.
Hey, everyone. It's Jeremy from the Front Row Network and
Steve. Hi.
And we're here with our very first interview from Wizard World Comic Con. We're here with Alex the Pumpkin Geek. Alex, thanks so much for talking to us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Looking forward to being here for the weekend here at St. Louis.
Absolutely. So, I mean, these pumpkins are ridiculous, man. I mean, like, this is crazy stuff here. Like, how did you get into this, and how did you find out that you were, like, this good at this?
Well, thank you. First of all, the pumpkins are artificial. So that's the first thing that people always question when they come up. They're like, oh, my gosh, are they real? No, the pumpkins are artificial. I get them from Michael's Craft Stores. Like everybody else, I was always carving organic pumpkins. When I got married, I just really wanted to have the cool house at Halloween. I started getting more and more obsessed, and then my wife asked me to carve her company logo for an open house they were having for Halloween, but it was early in October. I said, let me try one of these fake pumpkins. That way your boss can keep it. I did, and I got 35 orders that night, and that was about 10 years ago. I was doing it for fun and part-time and going to Comic-Cons. And 2 years ago, I quit my job, and I'm actually doing this for a living, and I travel to about 22 shows a year.
Wonderful, wonderful. That is some awesome stuff.
And condensed conversion.
Exactly, right there. We could go into the long form.
The long story.
Yeah.
First the earth cooled, but, you know, I'm sure.
Exactly. There was a bang.
Steve, you got a question?
Yeah, well, what's your most popular pumpkin these days?
Oh, that's a great question, because it literally has changed in the last 12 months. So I've been doing this for 10 years. So you can think about all of the great horror, sci-fi, geek culture, pop culture items that you could do, because everything I do is hand-carved with a Dremel. It takes about 4 to 6 hours, and it's all custom. In the last 12 months, one character has been ordered more than anyone else in 10 years. I wonder if you guys can guess it really quickly. In the last 12 months.
12 months. I'm going to say Deadpool.
I'm going to guess Thanos.
You're in the right world, Loki. I've had more Lokis in 12 months than I've had up until the last 12 months. My number one was Beetlejuice and Harry Potter. They were both tied.
You know, it makes sense, because people need something to hold on to now, because he is long gone, man.
But no, it is when I do cons and Hiddleston is there, he's got such a huge fan base. And so a lot of my clients will actually order the pumpkins in advance, and then they'll take them to him and they'll get Hiddleston to autograph them. So it's not, my stuff is really not just a Halloween decoration. People buy them as collector's items. They'll collect their Avengers, their Suicide Squad, or their Star Wars or Star Trek bridge. So it is really a lot more than, to me, it's illuminating your fandom, let's say. Yeah.
Now that is a catchphrase.
That's
a tagline right there.
I've done this before. This is not my first rodeo.
Exactly. So you do probably get orders that kind of purport to what comic book movie is coming out at the time type thing?
Yeah. I mean, there's
a lot of Avengers stuff coming your way now?
Yeah. There's always the go-to fan favorites. Every show I do, I will always get someone that's going to order some type of Harry Potter, whether it's the Hogwarts crest or an individual character. Harry Potter, Beetlejuice, there's always an Avenger. There's kind of the tried and true. I'll always get like a Michael Myers or a Freddy Krueger, the horror. I always get a Predator. There's a lot of the ones that are like really kind of, say, like my top 10, that no matter what city I do or who is at the convention in terms of the celebrities, I will almost consistently get those all the time.
Well, hey, where can people find you and order some pumpkins from you?
Certainly. If you want to find me on any social media platform, although the best way is Instagram, @ThePumpkinGeek is all my socials. I'm on Facebook and on Twitter, but not nearly as much. If you want to go to my website and see some of my work, again, my newest stuff is on Instagram. It's ThePumpkinGeek.com. If you want to email me, it's AlexPumpkinGeek@gmail.com.
That's tried and true, everyone. Get online and order some pumpkins, because these things are stupid good. Look at them. Look at them.
And it is worth noting, right now we're, what, first week of April? I'm about 4 months on orders. So literally for me, Halloween is tomorrow. So if you are watching this, don't like wait until September or October. By then, I'm actually taking Christmas orders. So really, if you're interested, you should contact me now.
Get them now. Well, thank you so much, Alex.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Hello, everyone. Jeremy Gechner here with the Front Row Network. And
hello, everybody.
And, of course, this man needs no introduction. This is Mr. Lou Ferrigno.
How are you doing? How are you?
Wonderful. Great, great. Steve, I believe you had a question.
It's so nice that you have been pulled into the current Marvel Cinematic Universe as a nice bridge from the work that you did back in TV. What has that meant to you?
Well, it means a lot, because the fact that when I began to host TV, I was like the pioneer. and Captain America at Spider-Man at the time with the TV series failed. But 42 years later, now we have all these A-listers playing all these different characters, but thanks to the Hulk, because when I started, we only had three channels, 2, 4, and 7. It was like 1 in a billion chance to get picked up with the series.
Absolutely. So I personally wanted to ask you, I know that President Trump put you on a fitness council, and I just wanted to know like how that is going and what exactly you guys are doing with that.
Well, they can't disclose it yet, but I'm involved with the council. So anyway, sorry for the...
No.
But anyway, I'm on the council, but they haven't decided what they're going to do yet, but I know I'm involved with Dr. Oz and the Patriots coach and everything. It's a great organization.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, you got anything?
You're looking good, and yeah. how long have you been on the convention circuit? Because I know I've seen you up in Chicago, and so how long have you been doing this?
Probably almost 20 years, because I enjoy it, because now they're at the con in almost every country, every state in the world. And it's nice to meet different fans from different parts of the world, because I get that instant gratification, the appreciation.
Definitely. So, I mean, obviously, these are events that are for the fans. And like Steve said, you're always here and you always get such a big response. And I'm sure that that means a lot to you to know that the fans are still there for you with all of your work and stuff.
Oh, yeah, because they come and they appreciate it. That's why my pictures and my posters, they want to have also take a selfie. So I have to make that connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Lou, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time.
Thank you, too.
Thanks, Lou.
Hey, this is Steve with the Front Row Network, and I'm here with Kivas. How are you doing, sir?
Outstanding, sir.
Doing some very cool artwork with Twisted Wire. Tell me a little bit about what you do.
Okay, I'm a wire artist. I've been making wire sculptures for 35 years since I was a little kid. It all starts out with one piece of 22-gauge copper wire, and I'm able to take that piece of wire and turn it into any character from Marvel, DC, Star Wars, video games, literally anything I can imagine I can make out of wire.
That's fantastic. And how long have you been doing this, did you say?
I've been making sculptures since I was 8 years old.
My goodness. So what are the most popular sculptures that you're putting out these days?
Very good question. Deadpool, Venom, Captain Marvel, any Avenger that's out there. So whatever is hot in the movie theaters tends to be what's hot, you know, for the wire sculptures. Because I make a lot of fan art. I have my own original wire sculptures that I make, but a lot of the people want to buy their own fan art for their homes.
Yeah. What's the strangest request that you've ever gotten as far as a subject?
The strangest request I've ever gotten was probably this one. It's a pirate that someone asked me to make. So I'm actually working on a pirate right now for a custom order that a young man asked me to create for him, and it's an interesting pirate. So this is probably one of the most interesting ones that I've ever had to do.
Cool, fantastic. Now, if people want to see your work, where can they go on the web to find you?
So you can go to www.twistedwire.us. You could also go to Instagram, and it's Instagram TwistedWire21, or you can find me on Facebook, and it's Facebook TwistedWire21 again.
Excellent. Well, Kivas, thanks for talking with us. Never seen anything quite like this. So go and check out TwistedWire.com, and thanks for talking to us.
.us.
.us. Thank you.
All right, everyone. Hi, it's Jeremy from the Front Row Network, Steve with the Front Row Network, and we are here with Thomas Ian Nicholas. Needs no introduction. Tom, thanks for taking some time with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, so last year we got to interview you, and you had a brand new movie coming out called Living Among Us, and I just wanted to personally sit there and tell you I went and saw it, and it was awesome, man. It was really great as a horror fan myself. I love what you guys did there with like the kind of 60 minutes element of it with the found footage stuff, and I just wanted to let you know that and just, you know, I guess get your thoughts on that. I liked it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was meant to just be a fun ride, a bit of a popcorn flick. So we definitely aimed for, you know, what we were going for, especially with the kitsch. I'm sure you appreciated of the cheesy news interviewers in the beginning.
Absolutely.
kind of like a throwback to the RoboCop interviewers.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've got a new one coming out end of this year. Really dark, a neo-noir drama thriller. Called Adverse. It's myself, Mickey Rourke, Lou Diamond Phillips, Penelope Ann Miller, Sean Astin, Matt Ryan, Shelley Regner, Luke Edwards, Andrew Keegan, Jake T. Austin, Sam Levine.
So is anybody not in this movie is what I want to say.
No, they're all in it. All of them.
Fantastic. Well, you do have another project that's been, it's listed as in post-production, but I really wanted to get, see if you could tell us anything about it, which was Nosferatu that's going to be, that's trying to happen right now.
I'm not sure what the status is of Nosferatu. Obviously, it's Doug Jones, playing Dracula or Nosferatu. Uh-huh. And then there is another film that I just found out is coming out in theaters in September called Zeroville.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Zeroville.
Yeah, so it's directed by James Franco. James Franco stars in it. Mm-hmm. Seth Rogen, Will Ferrell, Megan Fox, Danny McBride.
And, not very funny people.
Yeah, and I play Martin Scorsese. So it takes place in... it's obviously a period piece.
Yeah.
I want to say late 60s, early 70s, but I'm in it. It's part of the late 60s.
Yeah, wonderful. I mean, working with all those people there, that's so amazing. Do you have anything?
So comedy, horror, do you have a preference?
Ooh. Currently I'm making a direct left turn at Albuquerque, for drama. So, everything that I'm working on now that's on the slate is very serious stuff. I love both those genres, but it's one of those things where I try to go in line with, or I have in the past gone in line with, my peers. So obviously the people who, enjoyed Rookie of the Year the most when I was 12 were 12.
Yeah.
When, I was 18 doing American Pie, I would say that, the majority of the audience was also the same age. So we've kind of grown up together. And now that I'm in my 30s, my same, peers are more into the darker flair of more serious dramas. Absolutely. And that's what I'm focusing on right now.
Absolutely. We have a Disney show on the network, so I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about Walt Before Disney. Walt Before Mickey, not Disney.
That's all right. That's a common mistake. But he was always Walt Disney.
He was always Walt Disney, yes. But that is also just a great, great movie. I know you were here last year with John Heder, your co-star in that. Has the reception been good for that movie? Because I really, really liked it.
Yeah, people have been, really kind of digging it. And even though it only had a limited theatrical release, I think it did about 100 AMC and B&B theaters across the country.
Yeah.
But it's had a really big life on Netflix.
Yeah.
And so... I know you can order it directly from the production company or the distributor on Blu-ray and DVD, but obviously Netflix is, an easy one that everyone's got.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty easy there. So my last question, it appears the Cubs could use a relief pitcher this year or two. So any chance we get a Rowan Gardner appearance this year for the Cubs?
I will do my annual first pitch, sing the seventh inning stretch.
Awesome.
Where my band plays in Wrigleyville after. I haven't set a date for it yet, though.
Okay. Well,
I don't know what my summer schedule is. But it's usually, during the regular season. Yeah. In the summer.
Well, and I just want to encourage everyone. What we found out about you last year, you did some concerts here, and you are phenomenal, man. your music is absolutely outstanding. So please tell everyone where they can find your music online, because it's awesome.
Well, if you're here, I'm playing acoustic sets on the entertainment stage again. So I'll be playing around 6 o'clock today, 4:30 tomorrow. And then my band is driving in from Nashville.
Awesome.
In fact, my guitar player, his brother lives here and in St. Louis. My bass player, his brother lives here in St. Louis. But anyway, they're driving in from Nashville, so it's a full band show at the Tin Roof tomorrow night, and it's free for all Wizard World attendees. So
awesome.
If you have a Wizard World pass,
show the band.
Show the band, you're getting in for free.
All right, wonderful.
It's actually the official Wizard World after party.
Oh, awesome. Well, guys, get there, man. Come on, you will not regret it. This guy is amazing on the mic. Right?
Even if you're not coming to Wizard World, you can still come to the show. You just have to.
You have to pay money. So, Thomas, thank you so much, man. Very much. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Steve with the Front Row Network, and I'm here with Eric, and he's here with the crew of the USS Umiak.
Yes,
did I get that right?
You got that right.
Excellent. That is a chapter of the Star Trek Fan Association, Starfleet.
Starfleet International.
So tell us a little bit about your group.
Okay, the Umiak has been around since 1992. It's commissioned April 2nd. I've been in command of her for the last 4 years. And we put a bid in, along with another chapter of the Discovery, to host Starfleet International Convention Conference 2 years ago. Well, we got the bid. So something that we're doing that hasn't been done in a long time, like over 25 years, was to turn it into a full convention. And what hasn't been done, if I'm correct, ever, is it's open to the general public. So you don't have to be a member of Starfleet. You won't walk into a con where all you find is Starfleet stuff or Star Trek stuff. You will find things like you would see around here. You'll find all sorts of genres, all sorts of artwork, authors, and things like that.
And when is this happening?
This is August 2nd through 4th, 2019, at the Airport Marriott, right across from the airport. If you missed the hotel, you've never been to the airport.
And how can people find out a little bit more about it?
We actually have a website, which is www.StarfleetIDICEDIC2019.com.
Excellent. And I have to ask you before we go, Kirk or Picard?
Okay, I have the perfect answer. Okay. My younger version was all about Kirk. That's what I grew up with. The older version of me, well, you know, maybe Picard had it right that time.
Excellent, excellent. I kind of lean that way myself. So thank you, Eric, so much. And Trekkers, Trekkies out there, be sure and check out the upcoming conference.
Will you be there?
I very well might be.
Good. We'd love to see you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Jeremy with the Front Row Network here, and I'm here with Derek Whitaker, a wonderful artist here, and we just wanted to talk to you for a little bit about your art here. So tell us a little bit about your art. How did you get into this, and how did you find this unique style?
Well, everything, all the characters you see are all freehand drawings of mine that I've done over the years. Seen spray paint art done once, self-taught myself, and incorporated both my arts together.
You self-taught yourself how to spray paint art.
Sorry, yeah.
Are you insane, man?
A little bit, a little bit.
This is wonderful. So, you know, obviously we've got some anime characters up there. We got some superhero characters. Do you find that there's one type of character that you like to paint more than others?
Me, Dragon Ball Z all the way.
Dragon Ball Z.
Big fan since day one, yeah, especially Vegeta. So, yeah, that's my favorite one to do, yeah.
Fantastic. So, have you been around to a lot of cons?
Oh, yeah, I do this full time. I travel the country doing this. I got to do Chicago, all types of places.
Awesome. So what is it about doing the cons and interacting with the fans and stuff like that you love the most?
Man, it's just fun. We all get to nerd out, enjoy. We all have same things in common. So, yeah, man, it's just fun talking to people and stuff, you know, relating to people.
Absolutely. Well, and since we're at Comic-Con and, you know, there's kind of a big movie coming out, The Avengers coming up, I have to ask everyone, like, what do you think is going to happen with Avengers Endgame? What's your prediction for Avengers Endgame? Come on, Derek, hit me.
For one, I think Thanos snapped everybody out of reality, not into the Soul Stone. I don't think he did the Soul Stone. I think is it all...
Do an alternate time, like, parallel dimension thing.
I think with the new trailer, because it's all black and gray, and it only showed the red, and that's the reality stone that I think it's what's going on. But man, I think Thanos is gonna kick some butt again, like always. We might see some Worldbreaker Hulk, and I'm ready to see what Captain Marvel's gonna do, because she looks like Captain Thor and Iron Man all rolled up in one. How OP she is! So we'll see.
All right, so what? Give me a percentage that Iron Man and Cap make it out of this film alive.
Oh gosh. I think Cap's going to be gone. I feel like Iron Man's going to lose his left arm.
Left arm? Look at this. Coming at us with the crazy predictions here. I love it. I love it. Derek, where can people find you online if they want to get some of your artwork?
On Facebook, on D. Whitaker, Inc., or on Instagram at Derek.Whitaker.31.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Derek. Appreciate it. Hey, everyone. It's Jeremy here with the Front Row Network, and of course...
This is Steve.
Yes, down there as always. All right, and we are here with Chris Owen from the American Pie, of course, and many, many other things. Chris, thanks so much for taking some time with us today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, so obviously American Pie, I think it was celebrating its 20th anniversary last year, I believe.
Yeah.
You look back at something like that, like did you guys realize when at the time what you guys were doing, like that it was going to be as big a phenomenon as it was?
No. No. I mean... I'm sure some of those guys like Biggs or whatever kind of, maybe they had an inkling that they, I mean, I know that the people behind the camera definitely felt like they had something, like, you know, the Weitz brothers and Adam, Hertz the writer and all them, like, they all definitely knew they had stumbled onto something. But at least me and everyone else that I talked to, we were just, you know, especially the first one, we were just showing up trying our best to make a funny movie. Like, that was kind of it, and having fun at the same time. And the best part was is when we came back to do the second one, nobody had changed. Yeah. Like, everybody was still just themselves, and there was no divas, there was no ego, there was no, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, which is, I mean, statistically, I feel like
that's, absolutely.
So what are you working on now?
These days, kind of taking a step back from the acting thing, letting the jobs, if they come to me, if it's something interesting, I say yes. I started acting when I was 10 years old. So I'm old now. And when you've been doing something that long, you kind of get to a point where you're just like, you know, there's other things I've been interested in my life. I should probably see if I like those things as well.
Sure, why not?
So, you know, I had, what was it? I think it was a year or two ago, the Sharknado people reached out to me.
I know them, actually. I know the cameraman, Ryan Mitchell. He's a good friend of mine.
They were all really cool guys.
Yeah, they're really fun.
And I'm amazed, like, what, you know, shooting an entire movie in like 3 weeks that involves huge amounts of CG and, you know, stunts and insanity. They reached out to me, and they were just like, so Sharknado 6, it's a thing. Ian Ziering and Tara Reid, they have a son. And I was like, okay, I'll be honest, I have not watched any of these movies, so I don't know. But apparently he had been played by many different actors at this point. And so they were like, we would love for you to play him as a young, as a younger gentleman. And I believe I was like, from the future, stuck in the Wild West.
Of course,
as you do. That old story.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they said, we will fly you out to Romania. You'll leave Friday. You'll fly out Thursday. You'll lose basically Friday. You'll arrive Friday night. You'll shoot Saturday. You'll shoot Sunday. You'll fly out Sunday, and you'll be back in LA Monday.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I was going to say, how many times do you get that offer?
How many times do you get to be in a Sharknado movie?
That too.
Take that. Well, if you don't mind, I would love to ask you about a film celebrating its 20th anniversary this year that you were in that always stuck to me the first time I saw it, which was October Sky. And I don't know what it was like when I saw this movie. I mean, like, not to make anybody feel old or anything, but I was in, like, I think middle school when I saw it.
Yep.
But that story was just so well told in that movie. And I don't know, it just kind of got to me about how that was. And you played such a great part in that. Again, like, when you were making it, did you have a feeling of what that movie would mean to so many people?
You know, I knew that the script was great. I knew that the cast was awesome, you know, Chris Cooper, and I mean, it was Gyllenhaal before he was Gyllenhaal, and like, of course, like, it was great because Chris Cooper, like, was basically, anytime he was on set, he was in character. So I've never actually met him. Like, he was so intimidating. He was so intimidating that it was like, I think I introduced myself to him, and other than that, I was just like, he was just so scary. And so I knew the cast. I knew, and this was, I know, I'm trying to remember what Joe Johnson, the director, had done at that point. He had done some films that were great.
The Rocketeer was
right. The Rocketeer, exactly. He had done some work that was great, but it was also, once again, this was before his career just exploded, and he ended up directing all the films that he's directed now.
He did Captain America,
exactly.
The First Avenger, yeah.
Exactly. I knew that everything was there for a really great film, and I was really excited to be a part of it. But I'm also, I never know when I'm making a movie if it's good or not. I have no idea. I'm always hoping, obviously, always hoping that it's going to turn out, because, you know, there's so many the editing and everything that a film goes through. I mean, I've had movies where I've worked on a film for, you know, I've worked on a film for like three weeks, and then the movie comes out and I'm in two scenes. Like, you never know what direction a movie is going to go, what direction they're going to go with it or anything. But that movie is really one of the ones that I'm the most proud of being a part of, and I think really is a really great film.
Yeah,
and actually, as a story that I kind of tell on that one is the majority of people that I meet now are like, hey, you were in October Sky. A teacher made me watch that movie.
I'm not going to lie to you. That's where I first saw it. I saw it in the classroom.
Exactly.
And, but I mean, like,
but it was a great movie.
Yeah, well, it's so uplifting. And you know, like, it makes you believe that no matter what your dream is, you can do it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, something that I've always kept with me. So I just want to thank you and everybody else for that in that movie.
Thank you very much.
That's what movies can do. All right. Well, if people want to find you online, where can they follow Chris Owen?
I am on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm not very active, but on Instagram at Chris Cole Owen.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, everyone. It's Jeremy from the Front Row Network, and I'm here with Terry Huddleston. Terry, thank you so much for talking with us.
How's it going, man? We're here in St. Louis. I can't wait to get some barbecue after the show.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully a Cardinal win, too. Come on, baby.
I'm an Indiana guy, so I got no dog in the fight. Sorry, St. Louis.
That's right. You're torn between, like, Ohio teams and Missouri teams.
Right between two Midwestern states.
Well, we're here talking about your art here, and this is absolutely phenomenal. How did you get started doing this, and how long have you been doing it?
So I got started doing Comic-Cons way back in 2008. I just went to one and realized that, you know, I can take my hobby and turn it into a profession, and, you know, many moons later, you know, here I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So when did you first start drawing, and how did you kind of develop your style here?
I started drawing when I was about 11 years old. Like, seriously, you know, every kid draws, but yeah. I got 11. I was like, I want to be an artist. And really, it's because I couldn't make films. And so I would use kind of comic books to express myself and, you know, get my little stories out of my head. I mean, they were terrible stories, but I didn't know that at the time. And plus, I was just copying whatever I saw the week before. Yep. Like, all right, I'm going to make, instead of Spider-Man, it's going to be Nightweb. You know, so, you know.
I like that. Nightweb. I like that. Some TV studio. Pick that up. This is just absolutely insane. Like, I see so many superheroes. I see some original characters, it looks like. What do you love drawing more than anything?
I mean, I like drawing powerful, iconic art in general. That's like my thing. But as far as my original goes, that's kind of like the distillation of what I'm trying to do there and bring to Comic-Con and kind of add this, you know, almost worship-like religious aspect to art. Even though I'm not trying to push any certain religion, it's more or less, I mean, we're kind of in a cult already, right?
Yeah, like, we're all geek cult.
Like,
man.
I don't believe in nothing, like, but you have shrines to your favorite demigod superhero. Like, you know, come on, you're in, buddy. So I'm just leaning right into it.
Absolutely. So you say you go around, do all these cons and stuff. What does it mean to, like, interact with the fans that love this stuff more than anything?
Well, you know, luckily I've always been kind of a class clown. You know, I do stand-up sometimes and public speaker. So this is like a nice synergy of all the latent negative skill sets of being a blabbermouth and being an artist and all that stuff's all come together. So if any of my teachers are watching from grade school, I did it! I made it work! I remember my teacher, Mr. Hathaway, said that comedians don't get paid nothing, and you know what? You're right. That's why I'm doing comic book art instead.
There you go. Exactly. All right. Well, we're going to flash it on the screen here, but tell people where they can find you online.
TerryHuddlestonArt.com.
Yep. Go there, people, all the people on the network. Amazing stuff here. Just thank you so much, Terry,
no
for
problem,
taking the time.
Man. Thank you.
This is Steve Sykes with the Front Row Network, and I'm here with Brian with R2 Builders.
That's great.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great.
Can you tell us a little bit about your group?
Sure. We're a worldwide organization comprising of over 10,000 members, probably about 5,000 members are actively building robots, and we build full-size droids from the Star Wars universe.
Now, this one here is kind of a custom one you were telling me about. This is R266, yep. And tell me a little bit about the story of this particular model.
So I first started out by building an R2-D2, and then when I went to my first Star Wars convention and had my robot there, it was just one of 95% R2-D2s. So a blue R2-D2 doesn't stand out in a crowd of them. I want to do something different. So I have a 1966 Ford Mustang. I had some paint left over after it was restored to its original color, and I decided to turn this one into a tribute to my Mustang.
Fantastic. So how long have you been doing the cons?
I started, I've been doing cons forever. I used to go to San Diego Comic-Con all the time. In 2010, I got involved with the R2 Builders and started building my first droid. And since then, I've been attending cons primarily with the droids.
How long does it take to build an R2 unit?
Now, that's an interesting question. It all depends ultimately on what you build out of. Primarily, most builders build out of either wood, styrene, which is a type of plastic, or aluminum. Aluminum will take the longest because every part has to be machined, and it can take builders 4 or 5 years just to collect the parts to build your robot and go from there. If you're building out of wood or styrene, this one took a year and a half to build.
And about how much would you expect to put out if you were going to build your own R2 unit?
Yeah, there again, that's another question that the price goes across the entire spectrum. The more work you do yourself instead of having someone else do for you, the cheaper the build can be. So if you're building a styrene or wood droid and you're doing the work all yourself, doing all your cutting, you could build a static droid for probably $500. This one's probably $2,500, $3,000 with all the electronics and everything in it. So the more you do yourself, the cheaper the build becomes. The more you're having other people do work for it, that's what escalates the price and material.
Fantastic. So if people want to see more of your work, where on the web can they find you?
Worldwide, you can go to astromech.net, A-S-T-R-O-M-E-C-H.net. That is the worldwide club, and that's if you're interested in building, you can get the plans and everything to build from there. If you're local to the St. Louis metro area, we have a Facebook page, St. Louis R2 Builders, and that's where you can see us at events. We usually advertise where we're going to be at and that kind of stuff.
Fantastic. Well, Brian, thanks so much for talking with us. Have a good rest of the con. And this is Steve Sykes with the Front Row Podcast Network.
All right. Hello, everyone. Jeremy and Steve here with the Front Row Network. Steve, say hi.
Hi.
And we are here with David Alpay. Thank you so much, David, for taking some time to talk with us.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so obviously people know you from the Tudors and from the Vampire Diaries. I got to tell you, the Tudors has always been one of my favorite shows of all time. I just think that the drama in that and the performances were so dynamic. And I always feel kind of bad because I feel like it's like the forgotten awesome show and stuff like that. What was it like being a part of a show like that and being a part of a cast like that?
It was just amazing. I mean, I was on season two of the show. Season one hadn't even aired, I think, when we started shooting the second season. And so as it was released in the States and we got that incredible reception, we knew that we were onto something. And so it kind of gave us that boost, that energy to get into the second season and really just double down on everything we were doing. And it's funny, like conventions weren't super huge back then. So we never did conventions for the Tudors. And I always wonder, like, if the show had been shot 5 or 6 years later, if the universe around it would have been different, you know? I wonder about that sometimes.
I totally think so. I mean, because you see how many shows spurred off, like the period drama shows, you know, like the Da Vinci's Demons, the Borgias, you know, like all those shows. Like, and I think that the Tudors was there first, and they did it so well. And obviously such intense scenes and stuff. What was the atmosphere like on set, like when you're shooting such intense drama?
It could be tense, but luckily we had really great directors who put everybody at ease. The torture sequences and stuff that Smeaton sort of had to endure.
I know.
That was really interesting because, you know, all of the torture devices were props that they built specifically for that, and they built them, you know. They, like, that knot distorted my vision for about 2 or 3 days. I couldn't see straight. The rack made me about an inch taller. Like,
I know. I felt so bad. Around.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun times.
Of course, my biggest temptation was to ask you if Natalie Dormer is as beautiful in real life as she is on
the... She's more beautiful. Not only is she beautiful, she's one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. She's incredibly talented. She's so professional. Honestly, up until then and since then, one of the highlights of my professional sort of acting experience. I have nothing but amazing things to say about her, and yeah, I can't wait to see what she does next.
Yeah, me too. Now, I was going to ask you a completely off-the-wall question. One of your publicity stills back here has you playing a violin. Do you actually play the violin?
Yeah, 31 years playing the violin.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, the perfect meeting of role and actor then. Yeah. Look at that. So obviously, The Vampire Diaries was such a huge, huge hit on the CW. Unfortunately, no longer on the air, but, you know, like...
What?
Is it?
When did that happen?
No.
I thought it would go on forever.
Yeah.
No, that's Supernatural.
Yeah, right? Not anymore. They're all going away, all of our favorites. But obviously that show connected with the audience so much. What do you think it was that got the audience so much with that show?
I don't know. You know, it's such a great question because I see people who love that show from all walks of life, all ages, all genders, everybody. And it triggered something in them that was so passionate. And, you know, part of the fun that I have going to these fan conventions is getting to meet people and finding out from them what it was personally that attracted them to that show and kept them going. It's really humbling, actually, because it's rare as an actor to get to work on a show that has that kind of following. Yeah. And I've always been really respectful of that and really grateful to have been a part of something like that. So it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, where can people find you online if they want to follow you some more?
Well, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at David Alpe. And then on Twitter, I'm at Dave Alpe, because somebody took David Alpe. I don't know why anybody would want to do that. Yeah, seriously. Seriously. And that's about it. I'm not on Facebook, but I'm on the other two, and mostly on Instagram. I'll post random, you know, pictures of breakfast or something. I don't know.
And actually, I did want to ask you, though. You are a part of a show right now. I'm blanking on the name. The courtroom one. The wrongful conviction one.
Yeah, that's right. This is great. I'll do my 2 seconds. So I'm on a show called Proven Innocent on Fox. You can watch it right now. I also just shot a pilot for NBC called Prism. Yeah, it's about an hour long. No, I can tell you what it's about. It's
mysterious.
It is. It's a murder trial, and it's a legal drama. But each episode is told from a different point of view, a different character's point of view in the story.
Oh, okay.
So you get different, like exactly. So it's described as a Rashomon-esque story. So we've shot the pilot. We're waiting to find out from NBC if we've got a go, a green light. Yeah, come on, guys. Come on, just do it. So we'll know hopefully towards the middle of May, and then yeah, there you go.
Awesome stuff, man. Well, exactly. David, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
We really appreciate
Jeremy,
it.
I really appreciate it. Good luck to you guys, and enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Sykes with the Front Row Network. I'm here with Kyle Hudson. Say hi, Kyle.
Hi, Kyle.
Very well done. We are here at day 3 of Wizard World St. Louis Comic Con, and just wanted to share with you some of the things that we saw yesterday. As you can see, people are still showing up. The premiere draw today, I believe, is Jason Momoa. He is doing his photo ops and autographs today. But yesterday, we saw Tom Cook, who was one of the big animators in the 70s and 80s, and learned a little bit about how he came to be associated with Filmation. And Filmation, it was so omnipresent during the 70s and 80s because it turns out that the Filmation studios were about the only ones that weren't outsourcing their work to Asia. And so it was a great home for domestic animators. And then we saw a Charmed panel with Holly Marie Combs and Brian Krause and Will Fuller. And it was interesting. We noted there that they did not want any photos or videos shot during that. And we found out it's pretty much they didn't want anything brought up about the Charmed reboot, which is understandable, but so that was interesting. And then probably the highlight for us was a panel by Mr. Sean Astin, Samwise Gamgee, and Bob from Stranger Things. Very nice guy, took some good questions. What was your takeaway from the Sean Astin panel?
My overall takeaway was trying to decipher what his inspiration was and what that he had shot in the past with regards to Stranger Things, Lord of the Rings, or Goonies. I'm a Goonie at heart myself. I love that sort of thing. So I was always kind of wondering what inspiration he was able to draw from each of those pictures. And then more memories kept coming up in terms of other things that he had been in. So by the time my thoughts started rolling, I had too many questions and too many thoughts. There wouldn't have been enough time anyway. So,
So that was a fantastic panel. We got to speak this morning with the R2 Builders crew. We'll have that interview for you in a separate broadcast. But things are still hopping here. If you ever get a chance to come to one of these Wizard World Comic Cons, they are a fantastic experience. What's the most interesting costume that you have seen during this weekend?
The most interesting costume I've seen so far this weekend, I would have to say, is yours, Steve. I mean, you did them all. No, I would say it is the level of expertise that the children put into what they do. They have so much passion, and in such little time, they can put something together and just really do it, which I thought was fun, whereas we as adults are much more detail-oriented because we're more competitive than those children, I believe. And the children just seem to kind of put that competition aside, and they just have so much fun with it. So I would, to answer your question, in long form, I should say, would be the little guy who played, or who portrayed the Jason Momoa that we just saw out front. He was being Aquaman, I believe it was, and that was just the coolest thing. He looked like he was having fun, a little shy, but still looked like he was having a lot of fun with that costume.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us from Wizard World St. Louis. And as always, Steve Sykes, Kyle Hudson, we'll see you in the front row.
Okay, everyone, so there you have it. There are all the interviews that we did from Comic-Con St. Louis in 2019. Again, it was such a fun time. And look, even if you're not a member of the press like us, it's so much fun to go to these cons. You have such a blast. There's so many people there. There's so many people there that love the things that you love. You know, it's just a great place to come together and to talk about the things that we all love. And now the geek culture is becoming so mainstream and stuff. There's even more people coming out of the woodwork and coming out to say, yes, I've loved this my whole life too. And that's just a really, really fun, affirming thing to be at. So I encourage all of you, go to Comic-Cons, especially if they're in your cities, especially if they're anywhere near you. You know, just buy a ticket for a day, go there and just geek out, just be yourself. It is so, so, so much fun. The panels are awesome. They have games, they have bands, they have a ton of stuff for you. So, all right, so once again, look for our next episode in this series where we cover the interviews from the Heroes and Villains and Walker Stalker Con up in Chicago with our new correspondent, Trey Johnson. And then, of course, everything else from the Front Row Network. Of course, we're about to bust into our greatest sports movie bracket of all time. We've got an episode on the 40th anniversary of the 40th season of Survivor coming up. We've got a guilty pleasure on Drop Dead Gorgeous, which I'm really, really excited about. Of course, a new episode of Are You Afraid of the Podcast is dropping. Beyond the Mouse just did a trivia night that we'll be talking about. So, so, so many things. So if you want to find us, search, of course, on Facebook for the Front Row Network, Instagram, the Front Row Network, Twitter, at Front Row Reviews with a Z. You can find us online at frnpod.com. And of course, we are an NPR podcast. You can find us on nprillinois.org. I'm Jeremy Gechner, and as always, we will see you in the front row.